How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com, who saved the day last week and did the show along with Mike Coughlin while I was in Vegas for the UFC Lesnar versus Carwin show, which actually ended up being the best UFC event I have ever seen live. We could talk a little bit about that this week. Talk about some of the fallout, who Lesnar is going to be facing next, and some of my thoughts on some of the big matches on the show and whether it actually was a turning point for UFC, as a lot of people were talking about over this past weekend. We're going to talk about that, some other MMA news as well, and of course, as always, professional wrestling. Tonight is the TNA pay-per-view. It is Victory Road. They've got a red, white, and blue theme to the show, although you wouldn't know from watching the television. It's just another pay-per-view. Although, if you look at the lineup for this show, particularly as compared to a lot of the recent TNA pay-per-views, this one actually looks like it's going to be a really good show. They had a better-than-average impact on Thursday night, a great interview with Ric Flair that actually, I think, may have been the best interview in professional wrestling all year. So we're going to talk about Impact, we're going to preview the TNA pay-per-view, and of course, after this show you're listening to right now, if you head to WrestlingObserver.com, you can get live ongoing play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view if you choose not to get it. There are two retirement matches on the show, some title matches, four-way in the main event, a lot of other stuff. We'll preview that. Plus, a bunch of news, the Dream Show this past weekend. We'll talk about Kim Couture getting knocked out. Actually submitted after almost getting knocked out. Talk about Uriah Faber being out of his next fight, the UFC 119 card. Percy Watson is hosting NXT. We'll talk about all of the WWE TV from this past week, including Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, as well as the Impact show, Eli Cottonwood's mustache. Got to talk a little bit about that. I watched the Triple Mania show from AAA this past weekend. All of the matches, including the LA Park versus La Parca match, which I actually have a lot to talk about there, particularly if you've been watching the WWE invasion angle with NXT, because AAA did it differently, and in most ways, they did it a lot better. We'll give you an update on Ricky Steamboat, Hiroshi Tanahashi, who was also injured. Talk about a Paul Heyman interview we did this weekend that some of you might have seen. I'll give my thoughts on that. Batista Training MMA, Dragon Gate USA, and of course, a fun Dixie tweet. Those are always great. All of that coming up in the next 2 hours. We'll, of course, be taking your phone calls and emails as well. And we're about to kick it off after this first break. So head back for more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and the mixed martial arts. And of course, last week on the show, I was unavailable. I was on an airplane, in fact, doing the guest GM gimmick from 30,000 feet. Mike, you and the other Mike were recapping the UFC 116 show. And obviously, we don't need to do a full review of the show again since you talked about it last week. But in general, quick thoughts on the show.
Oh, just an absolutely fantastic show, from top to bottom. And you'll be able to tell everybody, a little bit better about the crowd and what it was like to be there live. But Lesnar and Carlin, with all the questions that we had going into the fight, for all of those to be answered, all those, different and unique questions, and how interesting of a matchup it really was when you really sat and thought about it, it couldn't have went any better. Szymanski and Bonner was great. I mean, it's just the entire card up and down. Akiyama just throwing caution to the wind and forgetting about his judo and standing in there with Levin was fantastic. It was a great night for the UFC, a great show, and apparently did great business, so just an all-around win for them.
I'd like to throw in again that I did, in fact, predict 4 out of 5 of these fights at UFC 116. Although, to be fair, the main event very easily could have been stopped in the first round. And the Yoshihiro Akiyama fight, I mean, realistically, he probably should have won that fight, but as you noted, the Japanese mentality took over of, it is better to lose a fantastic fight than win a boring fight. And not that the fight would have been boring, but the worst thing that Akiyama could have done with Chris Leben was stand up and trade with him. But they had a short period where they stood up and traded, and the place went nuts, and Akiyama decided, my God, they love this fight. I'm going to keep doing this. bad idea. He ended up losing the fight as a result, but still, that was a fight where you talk about creating stars because of one match. I mean, you know, in pro wrestling, it takes a long, long time to create stars because of the way that booking is done nowadays, where sometimes you'll give a guy a win. Like there was I think it was Shelton Benjamin beat Triple H, and it was like a real big deal for one night. And then Triple H came on TV the next day and basically said, you know, I lost, who cares? He didn't care at all that he lost. And so as a result, the Shelton Benjamin push was pretty much stalled. But I'm trying to think if there's been a match since like Flair versus Sting, like 25 years ago, where a guy has been made a star in an evening. I don't know if there has been, but Chris Lieben and Akiyama being there live and watching how much people were into that fight and how much they got into Chris Lieben. Now, granted, he's not going to be one of the top tier fighters in UFC probably ever, but if you look at guys that when they are put in the semi-main event, they are going to sell hundreds of thousands of pay-per-view buys just because they're on the show. I think Chris Lieben is now, he's joined that elite group. And I guess we'll see the next show if they put him against Wanderlei Silva. I think that's going to do huge business. I don't know if that's going to happen because Silva's obviously out with injury. But man, Lieben was overflowing with charisma on that show.
Yeah. Oh, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was the ultimate redemption for both guys. I mean, what's hampered Akiyama throughout his entire career from judo on has been the greasing thing. It was noticeable, obviously, very notable with Sakuraba when he did it. And, I mean, he's been pretty much a shamed guy. And he had the last fight against Alan Belcher where he, you know, it was very controversial whether he won that split decision or not. It looked like he needed a win. He didn't even need a win, as it turned out. He just needed a great performance. And for all the people that just hated Chris Lieben's guts and still think of him as the guy being a fool on The Ultimate Fighter, his career coming full circle, too, and just looking like a zombie in the second round, throwing blows like, you know, he was a machine, and taking him from Akiyama was just incredible. And, yeah, the charisma he showed and the old pro wrestling, just the way he stared at the crowd. A lot of people would say that about Johnny Valentine. They couldn't figure out how a guy could just look at the crowd and be able to control them, and that crowd was so jacked up from the action that when he did that between rounds, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was almost like it did. I don't think. I mean, you know, to the real hardcore MMA fans, I mean, when they see Chris Lieben in a main event or a semi-main, they're probably going to be upset because he doesn't have the best record. He's really not the best fighter. I mean, he's good for where he's at, but I don't see him beating Anderson Silva or anything like that. But I mean, you look at a guy who he's a megastar now. He is a guy that your average beer drinking guy sees as a dude that he may not win, but by God, he is going to go in there and he's going to fight anybody. He doesn't care. It's kind of it's kind of a bad analogy, but it's kind of the Steve Austin deal where he doesn't care. He's just going to go in there and he's going to try to kick somebody's ass. And part of the reason, I mean, I was thinking about this. I don't know if you guys agreed, but you know, when it was over, I mean, my first thought was that was the best fight of the year. And I emailed that to a couple of people and I think I tweeted it or whatever, but somebody responded back, how soon you have forgotten the Korean Zombie. And to me, this was a better fight because the Korean Zombie fight was two guys that went in there and they hit each other a lot, and it was really great. It was a spectacle. It did a good number. But, you know, come December when it's time to vote on your Wrestling Observer ballot for what the best fight of the year was, I mean, is anyone even going to remember who the Korean Zombie fought? Because I don't know a single person that talks about, oh, do you remember the Korean Zombie Leonard Garcia fight? They don't say that. They say, do you remember the Korean Zombie fight? They remember that wacky name, the Korean Zombie, and they remember that he was in a great fight. But I don't think they remember really anything about it. And to me, in fact, when talking about this, people say, you know, didn't that fight go to a draw? They're not even 100% sure about what the finish was. They remember, they think it went to the draw, but it wasn't like, you know, it's not something that was banged in your head. This fight, You created a star in Chris Lieben. You created a star in Yoshihiro Akiyama. It was the semi-main event of probably the second most purchased pay-per-view of all time. You had a decisive finish with a triangle choke submission by Chris Lieben. I mean, to me, this fight had everything. This fight had everything that, to me, is what makes a match of the year. It was an exciting fight. They split the rounds. It was even going into the third round. It was even all the way up into the submission. If they had gone to a three-round decision, I have no idea who would have won that fight. So, to me, this was the best fight of the year. And I haven't seen it on tape, but, you know, I don't know if it's going to come off better, if it's going to come off worse. But live, that was by far the best fight of 2010.
Well, don't worry. On tape, it'll hold up just as well. I mean, this is one of those arguments, too, where do you take the Ring of Honor of the Japanese match or the one that headlined WrestleMania as your, you know, match of the year? I mean, I couldn't, you know, if somebody wanted to take the Zombie Garcia fight, I couldn't really complain with that too much. But with everything and everything that went around in this fight and happened during this fight, yeah, I mean, it was the more epic fight. And until, yeah, somebody else knocks it off, I mean, again, no problem with Zombie and Garcia, but this was the fight of the year so far just because of everything that went into it. And, and here's the other thing with Akiyama, too, coming out of this fight. It's not like people said he should probably take some time, cut down to 170, and that should be where he's going to be at. Well, he's fighting in October against Bisping at 185 pounds in England, so we might see the exact same thing again out of him.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention that entire speech I just did. The other key to that fight and why I felt it was the match of the year was Lieben showed he was a guy that, you know, guys say this all the time. I'll fight anybody. I'll fight anybody anytime, anywhere. And, you know, a lot of the times they wouldn't. They're not going to fight somebody they train with. They're not going to fight a friend. They're not going to fight, you know, on 2 months' notice or whatever like that. Chris Lieben set the record for the fastest turnaround in UFC history. He fought 2 weeks earlier. He fought, he won, he had it in his mind that he was taking time off. They called him like 2 days later and said, we want you to fight. He was not quite sure what to make of this. They made him a really good offer. They offered him a title shot if he wins one more fight. He decided to take it. He trained for an extra 2 weeks. He had this incredible fight with Akiyama. He is truly a dude who will fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. And I just thought the whole thing was fabulous. We're going to actually, hold on.
We're going to $86,000 more too.
That's right. Well, I got to cut you off here. We got to head to a break real quick. Right up against the break. We'll talk more about this when we come back. And the Brock Lesnar Shane Carwin fight. I got a couple thoughts on that. Then we're going to jump into the TNA pay per view and preview that for this evening. So back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're doing a final recap of the UFC 116 pay-per-view from last weekend. As Mike mentioned before the break, $85,000 bonuses? I forget the exact number.
Oh, 75. Yeah, so Lieben not only made $86,000, he picked up another 75 on top of that. And the money he made from the last fight, he didn't do too bad this month.
No, he really did not. He got the best fight bonus. They gave a two best fight bonuses, in fact. The Krzysztof Soszynski fight got one as well. And in addition to all of the bonuses that you heard about in the post-show coverage, there were also, I could tell you, a number of just extra checks written to various people for this show. Dana White at the press conference was like, he was on cloud nine. He said it was his proudest day ever as a promoter. He was just so happy with this show. And who can blame him? It was phenomenal. And, of course, the main event, Lesnar and Carwin. Lesnar took the beating of his life, literally of his life, probably, from Shane Carwin in that first round. He survived. He weathered the storm. He was actually back on his feet by the time the round ended. Shane Carwin punched himself out. His body seized up. He could barely walk going into the second round. He was taken down. He was tapped out to a side choke, a head and arm choke, everybody, a submission by Brock Lesnar. And that also was one of the, it was just such an amazing show. You had the pro wrestling contingent there, Rock was there, Stone Cold, Goldberg, Jim Ross, all there cheering on Brock Lesnar as he fought here in the main event and weathered the Storm of a Lifetime as well. And it was just an amazing experience. And see all those guys together. I mean, you're talking, it was weird because when I was down there, I always go down for these UFCs. And, you know, there are a fair number of MMA reporters that started out as pro wrestling fans. And they now cover MMA. And so you can always talk some pro wrestling to them. And, you know, I almost hate to talk too negative about TNA right now because they've got a pay-per-view this afternoon that looks good and they had a good impact on Thursday. But man, you go to these shows and nobody cares about Impact. Nobody watches TNA. Nobody cares about TNA. They kind of know what's going on. I mean, there was this overwhelming feeling from all of the wrestling people down there that this company is just bottom of the barrel. It'll be lucky to last the year. I mean, it was amazing to listen to. And as far as WWE, you know, the general feeling was this company is going to be around for a long time. They're not losing money. They're not even close to losing money. They're making plenty of it. Yes, the TV is pretty boring. That's the consensus. Nobody really watches a lot of the TV. They kind of watch Raw. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes they just don't care. They don't watch NXT. They don't watch SmackDown. But anyway, the point of this is you had like three of the biggest stars of the last decade. You had Steve Austin, you had The Rock, and you had Bill Goldberg and Jim Ross, who called all of these matches. They were all there rooting on the UFC heavyweight champion. I mean, you don't see these guys in the front row at wrestling shows or even making appearances really on wrestling shows these days. But here they all were at UFC, and, you know, not all of them, but some of them were telling people that it so feels like UFC is the big thing right now, and pro wrestling is just yesterday's news. And I don't know what pro wrestling is going to do to turn this around. I mean, WWE obviously is got far more time to do so. You know, they're doing the NXT angle, which has bumped ratings up a little bit. You know, we've had a couple of shows that have done a 3.5, but TNA is like so just in trouble. I mean, it's so far away from pulling out of the rut they're in. And we even interviewed Paul Heyman at the show. And, you know, Heyman is negotiating with TNA, or at least they've talked to him. They really want Heyman to come in. And from listening to him, I don't know what vibe other people got. But, you know, the vibe I got was this guy ain't going in. He flat out said he wasn't going to be at this show. I suppose there's a possibility he could be. But, yeah, I'd really be surprised if he went in, because what is he really going to do? I mean, they need years and years and years to turn that ship around. And, you know, does Paul Heyman...
What does he gain personally out of it? Unless they say, here's literally full control of everything, which hasn't happened yet. I mean, you brought in Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan, and you kept Vince Russo there. You've said you don't want to get rid of anybody, you know, and granted, Ed Ferrara is gone now, but still... Unless he gets full control and all of these other interests and maybe, you know, some other special deal with Spike to develop some other type of programming or something like that, why personally would he want to do that? Even, you know, it's not like he's completely broke or anything like that. When he's got a young family, and it's just, it would boggle my mind if he were to go in there without utter and full control. And what makes anyone think that's going to happen?
Yeah, he's got little kids at home. He doesn't like to travel. I mean, for him to go to UFC for a week and hang out with Brock Lesnar, that was a real sacrifice for Paul Heyman in 2010. And he said that if TNA gives me a percentage of the company, like Dana White has got, Dana White owns, you know, 10% of UFC or whatever. He's a shareholder for Tita's own part. And then, of course, there's the company in Abu Dhabi that just bought in. But if they gave him a percentage of the company and he felt that they could take 10% of market share away from WWE, which that right there, you know, good luck with that. He felt if they could take 10% of the market share away from WWE and eventually, you know, initial public offering, the company ended up being worth like $300 million. And he got 10% of that, which would be $30 million over the next couple of years. He said, yeah, if I could do that, I would go. Now, to me, if I were Paul Heyman, do I really believe that I'm going to get a 10% stake in TNA. We're going to take 10% of the market share away from WWE. We're going to do an initial public offering, and the company is going to end up worth $300 million, and I'm going to make $30 million of that. Do I really, really think that that's going to happen? If you ask me, Brian Alvarez, I say, hell no. There is no possible way that's going to happen. Maybe Paul Heyman is got more faith than I do. But I just, you know, the idea of that even being possible is so foreign to me right now based on how TNA is doing that, you know, in a million years, I would never do that job with the hopes that that was going to happen.
What an interesting spot TNA's put themselves in, too, or maybe not interesting, depending on how you look at the TV, is you have this whole thing with they were going to have this major big announcement, which a lot of people thought was going to be Heyman, but of course they kind of hinted things before anything signed. You have this whole angle working where you now have your crowd chanting ECW, intellectual property not even owned by you, as you break out these older ECW guys and with Abyss, and you, what are you going to do with that now?
Well, it's funny because I just had Jim Cornette on our show a couple of days ago on Figure Four Daily. And we mostly talked about Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but the thing I asked him about was, Jim Cornette booked Smoky Mountain Wrestling, he booked for WWE, and he booked Ohio Valley Wrestling. Now, he did not book all three of those things exactly the same. You know, he made the point that, you know, anybody wants to talk about, you know, Ohio Valley Wrestling being Southern-style wrestling, you know, he's like, the show took place in the South. Of course I'm going to book Southern style wrestling. I'm booking Southern style wrestling in the South for a bunch of fans that live in the South. Of course that's the way I'm going to book.
And on a people, local TV station.
Yeah, on a Louisville TV station. He said, you know, some people, you know, they're like, oh, you can't book on a national level today because you'll book Southern style wrestling. Jim Cornette would not do that. And the funny thing about TNA is they want Paul Heyman in. And so they've already started booking this angle where you've got Tommy Dreamer, Raven, Stevie Richards, Rhino. They're bringing in this contingent of old ECW guys. Now, I can tell you this 100%. If you think that Paul Heyman is going to come into TNA, if such a thing happens, and start building an ECW around the ECW guys from the 90s, think again. That's the most astounding thing about this to me, that Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan and Vince Russo have come in and they're trying to rebuild the 90s. I mean, you know, we're going to get a Sting-Hulk Hogan match if Hogan can even wrestle at some point. You know, everything they're doing is a rehash of the 90s. And so they want to bring in Paul Heyman, and so they're starting a 90s ECW rehash. And that is not even remotely what Paul Heyman would do if he came into TNA. That's like the last thing that he would do is try to recreate the 90s. And it's like they have absolutely no idea. I mean, clearly they haven't run this thing by him. And, you know, if I'm Paul Heyman and I'm coming in and the main storyline is, oh, here are all these old ECW guys that used to work for you. You know, I'm like, well, let a bunch of young guys beat these guys and then get rid of them. It's, I don't know. Paul is not going to book TNA in 2010 like he booked ECW in 1999. So if you're a fan that is hoping he'll come in because he's going to do that, he's not going to. He's going to take far more from UFC than he is from ECW in 1999. I can tell you that with like 100% certainty. So I don't know. It was an interesting weekend. It was interesting talking to Paul. I don't know what move he's going to make. You know, part of this might have been a negotiating tactic. You know, act like he really has no interest in going in, so they offered him an even better deal. Or these could have been his true feelings. It's always hard to figure out what Paul Heyman is doing and what his strategies are. But it was certainly an interesting interview on an interesting weekend. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view, which takes place tonight. Ironically, headlined by a fatal four-way in the main event. We'll talk about that, plus the two retirement matches on the show. Two people are supposedly putting their careers on the line here on this show, which is not selling a single extra buy. But, to be fair, as noted top to bottom, this looks like it should be a really good show. And we'll talk about the Impact show from this past Thursday as well, which also was a very good show. All of that in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. The TNA, I guess, Victory Road pay-per-view is today. I often get the names messed up. The Victory Road show today, and Mike, I know you didn't watch all of Impact on Thursday, but from what you saw, your thoughts on the show?
It wasn't a bad show, obviously. I saw up until after the RVD Samoa Joe match, so I was actually able to end my night of Impact on a pretty good note there. I mean, one thing I know, and they talked to the Sports Business Journal about this, there's been pieces written about it, you've written about it, they are really trying to hammer home this, we're not PG WWE, but like they really beat it to death in the earlier, the earliest part of that show with Ken Anderson, and, I just, not that I have too much of a problem with it, just, I don't know, it's not working for me as far as how funny or whatever exactly it is, they're supposed to be pulling off with the whole a-hole thing and, showing Angelina Love and, and pretty much was like kind of a unsexy, just nothing happening, still shot of her, with her back to the wall, without a shirt on. It's just, okay, we get it. You're going to be edgier than WWE. I just wish they could do it in a little bit of a better way. But, the show wasn't too bad. I saw Angelina Love and Daphne in a short match, and that was what it was. The 3D stuff is kind of interesting with Jesse Neal, where they're going to go with that. That for some reason, I didn't like the thought of it at first, but I'm looking more forward to it, and especially the match tonight. So between that and with Kurt Angle and D'Angelo De Niro and a couple other things on this show, there's nothing that I saw, at least in the first part of it, that took me off or didn't make me want to order tonight.
I want to say something here about PG very quickly. I know I've talked about this for the last couple of weeks, but I know you watch a lot of Japanese pro wrestling, and when you watch those shows, do you ever sit there and go, God, it's so PG?
Never. Never.
Yeah, I did another show for somebody this a couple of days ago, and he was really upset about this PG direction. And I was thinking that there have been times in WWE where they've done PG programming and it's been really good and nobody has complained. And there have also been times where they've done PG-13 programming and it's been really bad and people have complained on a weekly basis. And, yeah. I might be wrong here, but I seem to remember almost universal praise for WWE from about January through the end of March of this year, in fact, as they were building up WrestleMania, and they had a bunch of angles that were really clicking, and, there were people that thought this is the best-built WrestleMania in years and years and years. You had Undertaker and Shawn, you had the, some of the stuff with Sheamus and Triple H, which actually I was not a huge fan of, but, they had an idea for the show, for all the matches, Edge and Jericho and that sort of deal, and Ray and Punk. They had angles for all of these matches that they were taking their time with. They were, as seen in Batista, actually was great. And, as they were building up WrestleMania and working on all these angles, I didn't really hear a lot of people crying about it being PG. And I think when you have a good, well-written, well-booked wrestling TV show, I don't think you're going to have complaints if it's PG. I think part of the reason that people are so upset nowadays with the PG is that when you get a show that really isn't very good, maybe there's a couple of good segments on it, but in general, when you have a Raw show that every Monday night, the NXT thing has been okay, but, in general, every Monday night, it's an okay show. It's not terrible. It's really not a great show. When you have that week after week, I think that's when people start looking at other things that they don't like about the programming. Like, God, I hate it. It's PG. It's almost like PG is something on top of everything else that really causes people to get upset. I think if WWE were hitting on all cylinders booking-wise and storyline-wise and the creation of new stars and everything else that makes a promotion great, I don't think you'd have a single complaint about PG. But I think...
And when people criticize WWE for that, that is, in a way, a lot of piling on, because it gets down to exactly what you said. It's the story that's being told. And the thing with TNA, and that is so ridiculous, is that they look at that PG rating and go the other way. Hey, look, this is what WWE is doing. We're going to be PG-13. Now we're not going to tell, or whatever they're trying to be, we're not going to tell as good of a story, even close to it, but you will see Abyss, you know, get stabbed with a glass bottle. And you'll have Mr. Anderson, you know, begin the segment by talking about a-holes. Okay, so it's then, you know, there are times where, you know, the Sandman's angle with his kid, it would not have worked in Philadelphia in that setting without the language that was used and without a lot of the stuff that happened. That was needed. You know, Steve Austin's character getting thrown beer and doing certain things, that type of stuff, you know, and the coarse language, that was needed. When it's not needed, though, then it's just gratuitous and doesn't make any sense, and it's being done just to do it, and that's the biggest problem with TNA. We're going to be so different than WWE in that we're not going to tell you a better story. We're just going to throw a whole bunch of this nonsense out there, and this is where we'll take it.
Yeah, the issue... I mean, TNA going PG-13, I mean, that's fine. It doesn't really matter, but... Don't go PG-13 because you think that the reason that people are upset with WWE today is because they're PG. And if you go PG-13, all of a sudden people are going to like your show. The Impact show this Thursday, I thought, was one of the better Impacts of the year. And one of the things about that show, if you watch it, anybody, listen, I don't care how big a TNA fan you are. If you try to tell me that that entire show was great... You have to be lying, okay?
Listen, you are lying.
There was a lot of really good stuff on the show, but there was also some stuff on the show that was really, really stupid. And it's funny because I like that show because they had a couple of matches that were really, really great. They let two wrestlers go in there and have a great television match, sometimes even setting up a match on the pay-per-view. That was great. And they had a Ric Flair interview where... Ric Flair went out there, and I thought he cut the best promo of 2010. I thought Ric Flair's promo on Jay Lethal was so out of this world. I watched it with my buddy Vince, who hates TNA with a passion, and he's forced to watch the program. We watched that interview like 3 times. We just watched it, and then we rewound it, we watched it again, and we rewound it. It was so great. And that's the thing about TNA. When they let guys go out there and cut a great promo, which they're capable of doing, or wrestle a great match, which they're capable of doing, everything is just phenomenal. When they go out there and they tell poor Doug Williams, and I forget who he was even wrestling, but they had, or it was one of the Generation Me guys. They had ladder match. I mean, I don't even want to really talk about it here. The ladder match deal that they did was so stupid. And it's setting up a match of the pay-per-view that is even dumber. And we'll talk about the lineup here in just a moment. But, I mean, there's good stuff on TNA and there's bad stuff on TNA. And the point of it is, the best stuff on TNA on Thursday night was not PG-13. Actually, maybe some of Flair's promo was. But that's, you know, Flair could have cut a great promo without, you know, making it PG-13. But this one just happened to be. But the point is... The best stuff on the show was PG stuff, but nobody complained about it because it was really good. So, with that said, let's look at the lineup for the show here tonight. It is the Victory Road pay-per-view. They are coming from the Impact Zone in Orlando, and the main event of the show, it's the four-way. Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy, Mr. Anderson, and Abyss. It is a four-way for the title. This was also a stupid segment on the show. They built it up by doing a match that ended up with Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy, and Mr. Anderson all teaming up as a unit to lay out Abyss. I have absolutely no idea how that sets up a four-way. I hope this match is good. I actually expect it to be a little bit sloppy. I expect to win by Abyss, put the championship on him. What are your thoughts?
You know, I had no idea who was going to win. I was thinking Van Damme may end up keeping it somehow. I don't have much thought on it at all, just because it was just kind of a thrown together thing. I mean, obviously Hardy and Anderson have been having their problems and all of that sort of stuff, but it's just, you know, it's probably going to be an okay match. I have no emotional involvement in it whatsoever, and it's just one of those that no matter who gets the title, it'll be, okay. What they've been doing with Abyss actually makes the most sense, and especially if they're still dreaming into the future of a Hogan-Abyss match, so it's a possibility that that's the way it goes, but I'll actually just take the other side and say Rob Van Dam keeps it.
We've got Kurt Angle, D'Angelo De Niro in a singles match, which may end up being, in fact, it probably will. Well, actually, the Beer Money Motor City Machine Guns match is probably going to be awesome, but this, if this is less than a four-star match, I'll be shocked, actually. 3 3/4, 4 stars, I would be stunned if it were anything less than that. Kurt Angle's great. D'Angelo De Niro's great. The match is going to have great heat. They're doing the storyline where if Kurt Angle loses, he retires, which nobody cares about. It's not selling a single pay-per-view, so why bother? But aside from that stupidity, this match should be awesome in the ring.
I did not like the teary-eyed Pope. I think it was from like 2 weeks ago. I don't want a teary-eyed Pope. It's still amazing that he was, you know, based on his past history, the number 8 guy in this whole top 10. But obviously, Angle's career is not going to end to D'Angelo De Niro with no pomp or circumstance on a Victory Road show. So Kurt Angle obviously wins. But yeah, it should be a great match. And the Pope is fantastic. And he is going to be one of those now. If Paul Heyman were to walk in, there would be one of the guys that, you know, it wouldn't be an up-and-down thing with him. They wouldn't have had the nonsense that he had with the whole Desmond Wolfe feud when Nigel first came in. That's something Paul Heyman would have actually gotten right, and Pope would have been a lot more consistent.
We've got Brother Devon, Brother Ray, and Jesse Neal in a three-way, and they're teasing that Brother Ray and Devon are going to break up and Brother Ray is going to go heel. Now, to me, that obviously means we're going to have a swerve. Either someone is going to run in and help Jesse Neal beat both of them up to set up tag matches, or Brother Devon and Brother Ray are going to break up, but Brother Devon is going to be the heel. There's going to be some sort of goofy booking swerve that makes absolutely no sense here. But match itself, I don't know. It's going to be more storyline than anything else. I really like the storyline, the role that everybody has played. I just know it's going to be screwed up in the end where what they're leading to is not what the end result is going to be. It kind of makes me sad, but I guess not really high hopes for this match, but it may be all right.
No, it kind of sucked me in. I thought it was kind of goofy at first, but as the weeks have gone on, I've actually kind of enjoyed it a little bit more. I mean, same way, I could see them, okay, all turning on Shannon Moore, and then they join up with the Abyss and the ECW guys or something like that. But, yeah, it'll probably be some sort of wackiness, but I guess I'll just say Bubba Ray. Why not? Bubba Ray and Jesse Neal get the win over Devon.
We got some Wikipedia comedy here. As you know, if you go to Wikipedia and you look up these cards, for example, I'll just take SummerSlam, for example. You type in SummerSlam, and the card's going to come up, and there's also an explanation of what SummerSlam is. And I just want to see if I can find it here. Let's see. Okay. It says, SummerSlam will feature professional wrestling matches involving wrestlers from pre-existing scripted feuds, plots, and storylines will be played out on WWE television programs. Wrestlers will portray a villain or a hero, and they follow a series of events that build tension, culminate in a wrestling match or a series of matches. As goofy as that is, let's read the one here very quickly from TNA. Wrestlers will be portrayed as villains, heroes, or less distinguishable characters in the scripted events that build tension and culminate into a wrestling match or a series of matches. That is fitting on this particular show right here. We're going to preview.
They're not wrong.
Yes, we're going to preview the rest of the card here in just a moment. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Only got a couple minutes in this segment here, so we'll preview one more of the matches from the TNA show, and then we'll do the rest when we come back from the hourly break. AJ Styles and Kazarian versus a mystery team. I have no idea who the team is. They have learned absolutely nothing from the failure year after year of Cyber Sunday. People don't buy pay-per-views when they don't know who an opponent is going to be for a particular wrestler or wrestlers in a scripted event building tension to culminate into match or series of matches. Anyway, I don't know who it's going to be. Joe is not on this show, so presumably Joe will be one of the guys. I think if you got Joe and AJ Styles in the match, it's going to be great. Leave it to TNA to not put Joe in. I just kind of expect that to happen now. But who do you think the team is going to be, and any thoughts on this match?
I would love to see Joe in it somehow there, but I could see it being the Young Bucks or somebody like that, or whatever they're called, Generation Me, actually being in the match. And then realistically, whatever happens afterwards is going to be the, you know, the real finality of that match. No matter how it goes with, you know, Styles and Kazarian and the whole joining or not joining of Ric Flair's group.
Yeah, that is a storyline here that Flair is forming a group called Fortune, and I guess he's only got room for one of these two. I'm not certain what's going on. I did miss a show, I think, last week, but I guess, you know, they've got to do this match, and one of the guys is going to earn his way in or something like that. I'm not sure. You know, if they work together to win, do they both go in? Are they going to attempt to screw each other out of this so that one of them loses so the other one can go in? I don't know. It's again, probably more storyline than anything else, although if they've got a good team, they could end up having a very, very good wrestling match. So that is that. We're going to head to our hourly break. When we come back, I think we've got four, maybe five more matches to preview. This is a 9-match TNA pay-per-view here. So we'll preview the rest of those, and then we're going to start taking phone calls, emails, and we've got more news to talk about. So that's coming up after the hourly break. Of course, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Spent the first hour talking UFC 116 and TNA, the pay-per-view. Victory Road is coming up tonight in about an hour, actually, right after this show goes off the air. We've been previewing the card. We have five more matches to preview here, so let's jump right into those before we have to head to yet another break. We've got the Madison Rayne Angelina Love match. This is the second match on the show where somebody is putting their career on the line. If Madison Rayne wins, Angelina Love has to retire. And if Angelina Love wins, she gets the TNA title. Why this is Angelina versus Madison Rayne as opposed to Angelina Love versus Velvet Sky, I don't know. My assumption is that maybe Velvet Sky and Angelina are going to reunite here tonight in this match and reform the original Beautiful People, which I think is... it's been a long time coming, but I think that needs to happen. We shall see. But it's funny they're doing another retirement stip when it's likely that Tara at some point is going to be coming back. She lost a retirement match here in TNA, but they'd already agreed to her coming back before the match. So don't even ask, everybody.
Yeah, they sold it oh so well with Madison coming out and saying, well, I'm putting my title up on the line because, you know, you're the number one contender, I would guess. And what are you putting up? She didn't have to put anything up. She's getting a title shot against you. Although I did also like Angelina saying when she grabbed the mic to call Madison out that she didn't have the balls to be there. I wouldn't think she did.
Apparently that was supposed to be an insult. You, my female friend, do not have the balls to be here. I don't know. So I guess the stipulation is that if any of the beautiful people interfere on Madison's behalf, then Madison loses the title via DQ. So, I guess that means that some other woman can run in and attack Angelina and retire her, I guess, if need be. Or the beautiful people attack Madison, and Madison ends up being the babyface and the odd woman out. I don't know where they're going to go.
Or Lacey is so foolish that she actually trips up Madison, which gets her beat up by Madison and Velvy because she loses the title and Angelina saves her, and then they can use Lacey Von Erich to just be a cheered girl who bounces around the ring, maybe on a trampoline.
Sure. Or jumps rope, as Kelly did on SmackDown. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we've got Flair and Lethal, Hernandez and Morgan, Motor City Machine Guns versus Beer Money, and Douglas Williams versus Brian Kendrick to talk about. Lots of stuff today, your phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, of course. In an hour, the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view begins. We've been running down the card for what seems like an hour now, but why stop? Let's do the final five matches here. We've got the Ric Flair-Jay Lethal match, which I wish they would just go out and have a verbal debate, to be honest with you. Ric Flair, at his age, I don't know about this match. Maybe it'll be really good. They certainly have had awesome promos. Match itself, not sure. One would think that Jay Lethal will get the win, but there may be some sort of storyline involving him losing. It can be done either way. Usually when the young guy loses to the veteran, it makes more sense if it's a young veteran as opposed to a guy that could be Jay Lethal's perhaps even great-grandfather. But let's hope for the best on this one.
I think Lethal is going to win. Whether he gets beat up afterwards or not is a different story, but I think he wins. And you know, all this stuff with Flair and with him, you know, it's made for a really fun TV if you're a fan, or especially if you're a fan of Ric Flair. And I can't say anything bad about this as far as Jay Lethal's aspect goes, because, I mean, for him, it's obviously an incredibly thrilling thing. And it's got to be fun for Flair, too, to have a young guy like that who, you know, it's not like Flair doesn't put guys over. It's just, did this actually sell any more pay-per-view buys? Probably not. Is it going to be a good match? Probably not, but Lethal's going to bounce around all over for him, and Flair's at least going to try. So, you know, I have no problem with it, but I can see people not wanting to see this match, and it's really debatable whether it's, did this sell anything?
No. I mean, let's be honest.
And that's too bad, because you have Ric Flair, who, again, you... There's a million and one ways to use Ric Flair and to use him in situations to get young guys over. And say, as entertaining as this has been, I don't think, you know, Lethal is going to be any better off for it when the match is over or not.
We've got Matt Morgan and Hernandez in a cage match, because, of course, so many people have run in during this feud. I don't expect this to be good at all. I'm not a huge Matt Morgan fan in the ring. I don't know if he's going to work very well with Hernandez. They can't even do the gimmick where you brawl outside the ring because they're in a cage. So I would expect this in the women's match to be way up there in terms of worst match on the show.
Yeah, I'm not looking, you know, overly forward to it. It's just my hope. It's just two dudes. I mean, you know, the whole thing in the first place was Morgan and his split personality and trying to break Hernandez's neck. That hopefully it's just a big, bloody, nonsense war between two dudes just slamming into each other, because anything other than that is probably going to be a little disappointing.
Beer Money against Motor City Machine Guns in...
Yay!
Yeah, this could be the best match on the show. This should be awesome. Actually, I just watched Beer Money at Triple Mania, and I was laughing because one of the commentators kept referring to them as the Beer Company. And I laughed every time, but I guess they're Beer Money Incorporated, so since they are incorporated, I guess they are the beer company.
Well, that's it. Well, yes, and they're, you know, sheltered from, if something happens, they won't get sued and all their personal assets get taken away because they incorporated themselves. But yeah, I still hope the Motor City Machine Guns win. I don't think that will happen. I actually think the... beer company is going to win. So,
oh god, if the machine guns,
no matter what, this is probably gonna be one of my favorite matches on the show.
If the machine guns don't win the titles here, I'll really be astounded. I mean, the whole storyline is, in all the years they've been in TNA, they've never won the belt. So I mean, they've got to win the titles here, I would think.
Well, and what makes you think then in that case that they will win the titles?
Because they just have to. Okay, I don't have a good reason for it. They just have to. Okay. We're actually going to preview the final match, but first off, let's take a phone call. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Zombie from NorCal.
What's going on?
Just a quick question for you guys. After Silva gets rid of Chael Sonnen, what are they going to do with Anderson?
Well, if I mean, they promised that Chris Lieben was going to get a title shot after he won one more fight. So unless Lieben loses, then it's probably going to be Lieben versus Anderson Silva again.
Full circle.
Yeah, basically.
So when he's done with Lieben, then he moves up permanently?
They have been talking about him moving up, yes.
Now, does Dana have the actual power to move him up?
Well, I mean, Dana doesn't have the power to really do anything. I mean, he can, you know, Dana has ways of convincing people to do things, but I mean, there have been fights that Dana wants to make where guys won't do the fight because they train together. So I'm sure if there are those issues, but you know, I don't think Anderson, once he runs for everybody in the division, I don't think Anderson's probably going to have too much of a problem with moving up. So, I don't think it's going to be like a big fight or anything like that. I mean, he's done 205 fights before, so I don't see why he would be averse to doing more of them.
One more UFC question. The show from Oakland, do you think it's going to end up being a Spike TV show for the Dana White giving back to the fans for Silva's BS?
Oakland? No, Oakland's pay-per-view for sure.
Wow. Wasn't it supposed to be Anderson's next fight was supposed to be a freebie?
No.
That was emotion talking.
Yeah, he basically said that if Anderson did another fight like his last fight, then he was going to take him off pay-per-view. Although, what an odd threat. We'll give him to millions of people to do this fight. So, no, Oakland's a pay-per-view, unless there's a drastic change in the next couple of days. All right, back to the TNA pay-per-view. Finally, we've got Doug Williams versus Brian Kendrick. This is the stupidest match in...
Oh, man.
I don't even know how long.
Epically stupid.
Listen, I love Doug Williams. I love Brian Kendrick. I think they'd have a really good singles match together. They are in an Ultimate X match that you can also win via submission. Now, first off, what a stupid match. You either scale cables 15 feet above the ring to grab an X, or you make the guy tap out to a sleeper hold. Okay, this is, first off, the entire concept of this match is stupid. Second off, the storyline is that Douglas Williams is afraid of heights. And they did this storyline on Thursday where they had a ladder match, and he was afraid to scale the first rung of the ladder. He's so afraid of heights that if he gets half a foot off the ground, he begins to pee himself. So this leads us to a match where Ultimate X is all about high risk danger. That's like why people buy shows, supposedly, in theory. They would buy Ultimate X to see high risk danger. Douglas Williams is afraid of heights. Now, it would be fine if you had a heel whose gimmick is that he's afraid of heights, and he's being forced into a match where he's got to go up real high. That would be fine. Instead, they have created a match where the heel is afraid of heights, but he doesn't have to climb. He can never leave his feet and just tap the guy out and win. This is like the dumbest match that they have conceived of in years, I think. This is dumber than King of the Mountain. I mean, this one right here is just, I'm gobsmacked at the stupidity of this one.
I'm not big on bait and switch, but it would have made more sense just thinking about it for 5 seconds to have Kendrick take a big fall in this, because they've never at any point, to my knowledge, ever said during Ultimate X that if a guy can't continue that the match wouldn't be over, that maybe Kendrick takes a big fall, Douglas is scared to go up it. They show that during the entire show or during the entire match, and then he just, after Kendrick falls, just basically chokes him out, his lifeless body, and the ref is forced to stop it. Yes, it would piss people off, but then it would make more sense, and you could establish that Doug Williams is scared of fights, and Kendrick may get another rematch. We have to have a bigger match because of this, you know, after what Doug Williams did. That would have made more sense than, we're going to have the Ultimate X match. And now all of a sudden, the guy that's been doing tornado DDTs out of the corner is scared of heights, and all of this other nonsense that's involved with it, just dumb.
So that is the pay-per-view, everybody. And for those of you that are not going to purchase it, if you head to WrestlingObserver.com, shortly after this show goes off the air, Dave Meltzer is doing live running play-by-play of the event, top to bottom, so you can check it out and get the results. And, of course, later on tonight, Dave and I are going to be doing a special edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, only available at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be talking all the news from this past weekend. We'll run down all of the matches from the show, and we'll tell you everything that happened, all the big angles, and where they're going for the next couple of weeks. That's coming up later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be back in just a moment with your phone calls and emails and more news. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails as well. And I believe we've got a caller here on the line. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Brian and Mike? This is Alex Goff. Hey, I got two questions. First of all, I would like some information surrounding Jake O'Brien at the Dream Show. Like, why did he show up so fat, and why did he throw that fight? Like, what was all going on with Jake O'Brien? And secondly, I would like to know your and Mike's thoughts on Strongman being entered into the G1.
Oh, goodness. Thank you very much for the call.
Two wacky Japanese things right there.
Well, as far as Jake O'Brien, I don't know why he showed up fat. I don't think that he threw the fight. I think that, I mean, I've seen this with a few guys. To me, it's like, I think guys know now that if their opponent trains for a long, long time and they fly all the way to Japan, if they show up fat, the chances of their opponent refusing the fight are very slim. Yeah, they're going to take a pay cut. Yeah, part of their purse is going to be deducted. Yeah, they may go to the fight already with a yellow card. But I think there are some guys that they're willing to take that risk so that they can go into a fight heavy. And, you know, I'm not saying that's what happened. I don't know. I mean, maybe Jake O'Brien had an injury. Maybe he was unable to train. That actually might be likely given the fact that he got guillotined in 30 seconds. I don't know.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have made up for the fact that he should have said something, or somebody would have said something considering he rolled in there at 226 for a 205-pound fight.
Yeah.
I mean, he got that, he cut down to 212, and then the doctors just told him, you can't lose any more weight, and it, you know, and they still have the fight, and it's still, you know, considered as part of the light heavyweight Grand Prix, basically because this is how it works in Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, there was wackiness on top of this week, and back in the day with Pride, there were enough free shows on there and enough good fighting on these cards to when fights would be made in 3 days or other wackiness would occur, it would be a big deal, but it would be kind of looked past. Between Jake O'Brien going in that heavy and Alistair Overeem, after Rico Rodriguez is already there on Thursday saying, well, I'm not going to fight because after the, you know, everything fell out, he was supposed to, I guess originally they were talking about him fighting Andre Arlovski. I guess that went away. He just figured, well, I'm not going to fight. I'm going on vacation to Hawaii and was in San Jose and everything else. He hasn't been training at all. They didn't tell Rico Rodriguez this until Thursday. So they still had to pay the man for just showing up.
I can tell you this, actually. At UFC this past weekend, Rico Rodriguez's camp, they said the fight's on. We've signed the contract. They've signed the contract. This fight is happening. And apparently they believed that all the way up until Thursday when it turned out that Alistair decided he wasn't coming in.
Yeah, Dream said that. Well, we expect Alistair to be there, except no one said anything to Alistair, I guess. And then they tried to turn around and give Rico, apparently they offered him up, or they tried to get a hold of Kazuchi Fujita, who most people would know as a professional wrestler, even though he rocks Fedor, you know, very noticeably, and Minowa Man. And he decided, I guess, that they couldn't make those fights happen. It was just bizarre. And even more bizarre to find out that after the Arlovski fight fell through with Overeem, that they tried to also give him Minowa Man. To which, you know what, they may be right about that. I think I want DKs to Minowa on every show, no matter who it's for.
Now, tell us a little bit about Strong Man.
This is more up your alley in the with your Groons and your Grandas and your just amount of other dudes in Mexico who can't work. Now, the thing with Strongman is, well, he's a very strong man. He's very big. He's very muscly. He came over to New Japan a little bit earlier this year and was very big and very muscly, and that was about it. But he, for some reason, because of the synergy working between New Japan and CMLL, he has been entered into this year's G1 Climax tournament, the 20th anniversary. And, not one of CMLL's finest, but he is a big dude, and he's probably going to take a nice big goose egg during the competition. But it is something to put on your resume.
Let's go back to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Ed in San Antonio.
Ed, what's up?
Not too much. Just wondering how you guys can do a show during the World Cup, man.
Easy.
But my question actually is regarding TNA. I was reading that Velvet Sky actually got a raise and pretty much got her her spot pay pretty much doubled. I was curious, did all the TNA knockouts get a raise, or was it just Velvet?
This was just her contract. She signed a new one.
Really? That's kind of disappointing because you hear so many stories like Lacey Von Erich not being able to afford a lawyer and that Madison Rain has to miss house shows because she can't afford to go on the road. Do you think that there will be a chance that they'll give the rest of the girls a raise or
did
Velvet just get lucky?
Now? Absolutely not. No. I mean, they're in dire straits right now. And It's Velvet Sky does all right because she's Velvet Sky and she makes a lot of money doing personal appearances and she gets bookings elsewhere and autograph signings and that sort of thing. But I mean, these women are not highly paid, and you know, a lot of the guys, you know, I don't think a lot of the guys are making $600 a shot, but a lot of the guys aren't highly paid either. I mean, there's not a lot of money being paid to these people in TNA, except for the real big tippy-top guys, the Kurt Angles and that sort of thing, and the Stings and such. It's just the Young Bucks are probably not making a whole hell of a lot more than $600 a shot either. And I'm sure they'll be on their Twitter later today denying that, but it's just the way it is.
Cool. And do you think, there's been a bunch of rumors on your board. What's the word on Heyman?
There really is no word. I'd be stunned if he were in today. I'd be surprised if he came in at all. I don't see the upside for Paul Heyman to do this.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, thanks very much for the call, Ed. All right, let's look at some of the email questions here. This person says, if a wrestler dies while under contract to the WWE, does the WWE pay out the rest of his money from the contract to his family? I think it's probably on a case-by-case basis, but in a lot of cases, yes, they do. And guys will still get royalties as well, unless you're Martha Hart, in which case they will not pay you royalties, and then you'll be taken to court. There you go. This person says, TNA television clearance on Spike. With all the turmoil recently, I was wondering how much the Spike TV clearance is worth. If TNA went belly up, would Spike still be interested in carrying a wrestling product? What would it take for someone to come along and satisfy the Spike requirements to assume that clearance? Is it possible for promotions to buy TV time? Well, of course they can buy TV time, but that's not a good idea. Because once you start buying TV time, I mean, that's how companies go out of business. Spike clearance, I don't know what it's worth. I guess probably about, I don't know, $200,000 per episode, maybe $250,000. I don't think it's a hell of a lot more than that. I could be wrong, but I would guess it's somewhere in that range. And yes, I think that they always will want wrestling. If TNA goes belly up, I mean, it's going to cost a wrestling company to start up is going to need more than $200,000 a week. So it's going to have to be, you know, somebody with money. I don't know who that's going to be. It's really impossible to say. But, you know, if they go belly up, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be wanting that time slot.
Yeah, and I'm sure Ring of Honor would, too. You know, obviously they're locked into a deal with HDNet. And, you know, it's just who would be the one to go ahead and start it up. But as long as Spike's in the position they're in, and, you know, they are still a growing network and, you know, trying to add in more sports and things like that. And they're competitive with Versus and some other channels. Yeah, obviously, just because of the cost to the rating ratio, obviously they would want something on there. Because even in TNA's bad straits, I mean, people might make fun of the 0.8 rating, and you can do it when it comes to, you know, wrestling TV ratings. But when it comes to a lot of other shows on cable that are basically don't even register a rating, or very, very, you know, far lower than that. I mean, it's still good to have something like wrestling on there because it does get a certain segment no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, the Impact rating is remarkably consistent among the people that actually watch that show. So, you know, it's still a good number for the station. So it really depend on it would really depend on who could step forward and offer to take that slot and have some money behind them. Let's go to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is JR from Nashville, Tennessee. What's going on, fellas?
What's happening, JR?
Nothing much, man. I was just wondering, what do you think if Brock happens to beat Cain Velasquez and Roy Nelson was to happen to get past Junior Dos Santos, given the countdown special that might be between the two of those big promo boys, do you think it has a possibility of being UFC's biggest fight ever?
I would not say biggest fight ever. I think at this point, especially after, you know, UFC 100 and after this past UFC, which was one of the best shows they've ever done, maybe the best show they've ever done. I mean, I think that at least for the next couple of Brock Lesnar fights, anytime he fights, it's going to do probably a million buys. And actually the fight with, Cain Velasquez is going to be like, it's going to be a good barometer right there because, I mean, like the fight we just saw, I mean, Brock promoted that entire show realistically on his own. Shane Carwin did not really help matters much for whatever reason. And Cain Velasquez is probably going to even be worse because he's a super shy guy. But I still expect Brock fighting in a heavyweight title fight to do a million buys. And I think Roy Nelson, it's just so hard to say, especially this far in advance. I mean, you know, Roy Nelson can talk. He's got that look about him. He's a very different kind of guy. And I think it would do good numbers, but as far as like the best numbers ever, I just don't know. I don't have that vibe. What about you, Mike?
I think Lesnar is, if he's fighting a nursery school student, he's worth $750,000 buys. And really the fight, if he did fight Nelson, it would be a million buys. It would be just for them, you know, letting Nelson run his mouth. And that's the thing too.
Actually, Mike, hold on 1 second. We're going to head to a break. We'll continue this when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking about the potential of a Brock Lesnar-Roy Nelson fight. And Mike, go ahead and continue.
The thing is, if the UFC lets Roy Nelson be Roy Nelson, because we've kind of seen it with Dana White. I mean, I think he let Rothwell up in the main roster, and yet Roy Nelson was the one put on the Ultimate Fighter show, even though his level of experience probably shouldn't have been a dark match, yeah. But, you know, it ended up turning out for the best for him anyway. But he seems to have this love-hate thing. You know, Dana White loves saying he likes the UFC flying under the radar. He'd love to have these big companies in, but he likes flying under the radar a little bit. But then he looks at Roy Nelson, and, you know, I think almost like people look at Roy Nelson, and even though he's got incredible skill, you know, and he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's a quality guy, they just look at that big gut, and they somehow think throwback to a day where the UFC wasn't, you know, what it is today, and had people looking at it like tough man. But realistically, because of Roy Nelson's skill and the fact that he's so charismatic and so personable and could talk his ass off, that fight could be the biggest one of all time because you have the ultimate, you know, the ultimate two opposites and a guy that looks like Lesnar and is, even though he's a lot more humble now, he's still big and mean and scary and has got a big ego. And then you have, you know, the complete, you know, opposite to that, the everyman looking Roy Nelson, or, well, I guess it is America. We are kind of overweight. He is the everyman looking kind of guy. But he's the guy that you can send on a lot of these talk shows and things like that and to talk people in those last couple of weeks leading up to the fight. So, to be honest, maybe I'm overselling Roy Nelson here a little bit, and granted, he's still got to get by Junior Dos Santos, but realistically, that they could actually be able to pull that one off. And Lesnar not wanting to do a lot of the lead-up stuff and have the camera in his face during his training, you won't need that much. You can do that just a little bit and have Roy Nelson take the rest.
Back to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Taylor in San Francisco.
What's happening?
Hey, real quick here. I saw recently on the message board at WrestlingObserver.com, it was a picture of Rock, Austin, and Goldberg at UFC 116, and it's something somebody made the alluded to the three being three of the four heads of Mount Rushmore for the wrestling boom in the late 90s, and there was some debate as to who that fourth person would be. Any thoughts on your end as to who would be the fourth member of that Mount Rushmore of the group?
Of the late 90s?
Well, the wrestling boom, you know, for WCW, WWF from 95 to 2000.
I would guess probably, I didn't write that, it was probably Dave, but my guess would be that the fourth would be Vince McMahon.
There was some debate, maybe it would have been Foley, but probably, or somebody even, obviously, Undertaker, but or even Shawn, but I think a lot of people were saying that Vince would probably be the guy as well.
Yeah, I would say Vince. What about you, Mike?
I would probably say in that context, Vince, although, you know, like you said earlier on, too, you know, for my money, the guy who, you know, was able to sell us on all that stuff is Jim Ross, so it didn't hurt my feelings if you plot his face on there.
Yeah, well, he was there, so it would have been one of them. Let's look at the mailbag here. Actually, let's do a couple of news notes, and we'll go back to the mailbag. Batista did some training with the Gracies this week to determine whether or not he thinks he can do this. He's talking about fighting. He wants to do a deal with Strikeforce. What are your thoughts on Batista going into MMA?
You know, on the Wikipedia for Strikeforce, they already had his name listed, or somebody's decided to already list his name amongst the other heavyweights, but he's a 40-year-old dude. There's been nothing like Lashley and Lesnar and a lot of guys. We know about their backgrounds. I'm not sure exactly what Batista has done, but realistically, they haven't trumpeted up any of his great high school performances or if he did anything in junior college or anything like that as far as his background. And I don't know. Yeah, at 40 years old and as banged up as, you know, he always seemed to be in pro wrestling, I don't see how he's going to be able to pull it off and be anything more than a sideshow. Although, if he can get just trained enough where you can have like one or two fights out of him, I guess, you know, on Showtime, it wouldn't be that bad of a deal. I mean, it really wouldn't. We saw it with Herschel Walker. It's just that, and I know that's what Strikeforce and what he'll say is, you know, look at Herschel Walker's age and all that stuff, but Herschel Walker is a physical freak.
Yeah.
And even he's not, you know, he took his one fight. He's not sure if he's going to have another one. I'm sure he probably will, but I don't see anything about Dave Batista or his past that makes you think that he's even going to have, even if he's got the heart and the drive and the determination, he's not going to have the time.
Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view this past Friday night was a really good show. It's not replaying this weekend, but I presume it's going to be replaying in the next couple of weeks on your in-demand or whatever your pay-per-view provider is. So if you get a chance to check that out, might want to do so. I think it's either $14 or $19.95. But in terms of wrestling action, if you're a big fan of professional wrestling, it's a good show to get. You're not going to get great production. You're not going to get great angles or anything like that. You're just going to get solid, state-of-the-art professional wrestling. And there was a lot of good stuff on that show. I know you haven't seen it, Mike, yet, but it's one you might want to check out. I also watched the Triple Mania show. Been airing the last 2 weeks on AAA on Galavision. And it was, of course, headlined by the LA Park versus La Parca match, which I gave it 4.25 stars. I thought they did a great job. Well, mostly L.A. Park. La Parca, he's old. He's injured. For those that remember WCW, L.A. Park is the original La Parca from WCW. And after he left AAA, they basically created a new character. Since AAA owned the likeness of La Parca, they gave the gimmick to a new guy. And the original La Parca changed his name to L.A. Park to get around it. And they ended up coming together this year in AAA, and they set up the big match between the two of them. And the AAA La Parca was expected to be the babyface, but I think that a lot of the fans at Triple Mania, the real hardcores that showed up for the event, saw La Parca as the cheap imitation, the ripoff. And so there was it was just an incredible, I mean, the crowd throughout the entire match was just screaming, and the heat was incredible. And they had this match where L.A. Park just beat the crap out of this poor guy. And, you know, by about the 15-minute mark, La Parca looked like he'd, you know, been in like a fight. He was just dragging himself around the ring. He looked so blown up and so tired. L.A. Park was, you know, he's much fatter, but he was good to go throughout this entire match. And they went back and forth, and the finish saw the referee take a bump. And L.A. Park gave La Parca the dreaded martinet, which is a tombstone pile driver. It's illegal. And at that point, the people in charge of the promotion, Dorian Roldan and his father, Joaquin Roldan, got involved. And La Parca ended up hitting, L.A. Park ended up hitting both of them with a chair, at which point Dorian, I guess, got a chair after. Anyway, there was a whole schmoz, and finally, all of the guys from Los Perros del Mal, which is an independent group down in Mexico, they did the big invasion. They dragged L.A. Park on top of La Parca so he could get the win in what was billed as a name versus name match, where the winner got to become the only La Parca, which, by the way, they never followed up on. L.A. Park is still working as L.A. Park, and La Parca is still working as La Parca. But regardless, when the Perros del Mal guys came down the ramp, I mean, you should have seen the reaction for this invasion. And they came down, they celebrated in the ring, and then finally Perro Aguayo Jr., who is the leader of the promotion, showed up in a white limousine, walked down to the ring, cut a promo, and just the I don't even know how to explain it, the excitement to see this all happen and the fans going nuts and pelting the ring with garbage. I mean, this really came off as like a real, legit, money-drawing invasion angle. For those of you that have been impressed with the NXT angle, I mean, this was NXT to a different level with real, legit superstars, and I just thought it was awesome TV. I know you probably haven't seen it yet, Mike, but it was something to see.
No, I haven't heard all the, you know, I have heard a lot of the talk about it and everything too. And I know that there was inherent risk in them doing a invasion angle as well, as having, you know, bringing those guys who made their names in CMLL back and everything. But, it shows you too, because I'm not sure exactly what the outrage level is in Mexico over the fact. I know there was some confusion, in the days afterward over, you know, what was the result of that match. Everybody was satisfied enough with it where, you know, it didn't really matter. That part of the storyline didn't really matter over who actually got the name, if they're both working the same way.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, but we have time for one more phone call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? He's calling from Fail. Yeah, someone had mentioned to me that you got to watch this match because it's the L.A. Park win was just like so completely decisive, and it really was. I mean, he beat this guy, and I don't know. I watched the final moments and the run-in afterwards a couple of times, and it was a really cool deal. So for those of you that have not seen that, if you get a chance to do so, check that out. Mike, this coming Tuesday, Percy Watson hosts his own NXT talk show. Are you excited for that one?
I am actually a little bit excited for that one, and hopefully he gets the chance to really sit there and talk to Eli Cottonwood a little bit more about mustaches, and maybe he'll even throw in goatees on him.
I think that...
But you know, I want to... You know, there's got to be some synergy. They have that with NBC because of USA, and I know NBC is the one that distributes or had for years. It's Showtime at the Apollo. They need to take that It's Showtime, you know, song and dance opening and apply it to Percy Watson's new TV show or talk show.
I am very excited for the Percy Watson talk show. It's going to be good stuff. Do you know that I think on The Soup, they actually played the footage of Eli talking about his mustache this week?
Yes.
Awesome.
I don't know if it's because they don't care or, I don't know exactly what it is of why they decided, being so universally panned the first time around, to bring back like the keg challenge and to bring back, you know, because that's how you can figure out charisma, is by putting a guy out there and just giving him a word he's not ready for and watching him flail around and fail miserably.
It's good times. Show's awful. I mean, let's be serious here. I want to mention very quickly before we head to the break here that we don't have an update on Ricky Steamboat. I believe he's still in the hospital. If he was released, it would have been like in the last day or so. I would expect I would have heard about it if he were out. But the feeling is that he's probably going to be okay, and once he ends up taking a month to rest at home, he'll probably return to his duties as a backstage agent for WWE, so that's very good news. But, you know, they're as they always do when things like this happen, they're strongly considering never involving legends in physical beatdowns again, and I am all for that. And that includes probably, I don't want to say most importantly, because, you know, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, but, you know, Vince McMahon needs to stop taking beatings. He really does. He just needs to stop.
Well, here's the thing. He needs, and it's just like the legends in this situation. I mean, it looks like when these guys get thrown into Skip Sheffield that they are running into a brick wall and just getting smashed and dropped on their backs because they are. I think it depends on who's doing that beating and how it's done. And, yeah, obviously, I mean, they haven't drawn the line between Steamboat. And, in fact, they said it probably had nothing to do with the beating he took on Monday. But, I mean, it looks ugly because it looks like it hurts because it does. And that's the stuff that they need to watch. I mean, because Jericho and Steamboat together, if they want to stop taking guys out of it all together, that would be really disappointing.
I actually want to talk about this very briefly when we come back from break. I have one thing to add to that about why, even with all that said, I think Vince McMahon should not be in the ring taking beatings. But that's coming up after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking before the break about why Vince McMahon needs to no longer take beatings. I wanted to add one thing to that. I am pretty sure that if I got in the ring with Vince McMahon, I could perform offense in such a way that I would not hurt him at all. I would not touch him with anything. But the problem is, Vince McMahon never really trained to be a wrestler. And even if I gave him like the lightest clothesline, like a clothesline that would not hurt an infant, even if I gave him that clothesline, there's no guarantee that he's not going to take the bump wrong and land funky on his head and break his neck. I'm more concerned about the goofy bumps that he takes than actually people hitting him too hard. So to me, it's just, I think we've seen enough of Vince
true.
In the ring.
He almost killed himself with the entire Hart family there at least one time with Harry Boy Smith, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And it's just bad times. But with all that said, everybody, we've got to wrap this show up today. We are completely out of time. The TNA Victory Road pay-per-view is coming up right after the show goes off the air here. So in just moments, it's beginning. And as always, if you don't want to purchase the show, head over to WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to be doing live running play-by-play of the show with Dave Meltzer. He'll give you the results of the matches as they take place. And then, of course, later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave and I, brand new show, exclusive for website members, talking all of the news, run down the pay-per-view, and much, much more. We've got daily radio shows up on the site. If you only hear this show once a week, but you'd prefer to hear wrestling radio every single day, sign up at WrestlingObserver.com, and you will never be at a loss for wrestling radio. I should mention the archives. Thousands of shows dating back to 2005. So, as noted, you'll never run out of things to listen to. So, check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike and I are going to be back next week with a brand new show. We'll have lots of stuff to talk about, including the WWE pay-per-view coming up next Sunday. So, that will be the plan. Thanks, as always, to everybody for listening. Thanks for your support at WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Mike. And we'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network.